Are we good?
And looks like it. Hello
All
and
right.
welcome to the Heresy Lodge. I'm your host, Dylan Cooper, the Constant Coast over here.
Gavin Franklin.
And guys, we are here this week to review Betrayer by good old ADB. And before we even start, I just want to say, holy fuck.
Yeah, great book. I'm very excited. We are remote this week. I'm not cosplaying right now. I'm wearing a Snuggie. And the reason we're actually remote is because I am pretty sick. was not able to make the drive up to Indianapolis and didn't want to spread anything to Dylan, although that would be a very great way to kill you.
I suppose that's what I want.
That is my plan.
But if I fill my certification Sunday, you are more than welcome to come over.
So, we are remote. I have taken a COVID test. I haven't gotten the results back yet, so I have no idea. It hasn't been too bad. I think I'm like getting over it now. If my voice sounds really weird, that's why.
Man, you just sound so nice and sensual.
A lot of times, females swoon to me when I'm sick, which is Nurgle's way of spreading infection.
Especially the older
one. Yes. My girlfriend just gave me the weirdest look.
Excuse me? But guys, before we get too far into the book, as always, please, if you are watching us on YouTube, if you haven't subscribed already, please subscribe, like the video. If you are listening to us and you haven't interacted with us, you can do that by going on our Discord. And it's always a good time. It's been quiet the last couple of weeks because our Lattice member hasn't been available. He should be returning soon, and it's going to be hype. Yes. And you can do that by joining or going to our Twitter at Heresy Lodge. It's pinned to the top. We also have tips enabled now. So if you ever feel like you just want to contribute to the podcast, anything that gets tipped to us, it immediately goes right back into it, whether it's for the tabletop and bringing in new armies, beer money, maybe new equipment. I think we're good on equipment. Maybe get Gavin a new mic. That might be the next big thing for remote episodes.
It's true. Yep.
So yeah, that's on there. You can email us at theheresylodge@gmail.com. And I think that's all of our socials. We are drinking alcohol. I'll go ahead and start because I am drinking some mead and it's fucking good. This is called New Wave Lemonade.
Oh, let's
see
the
blueberry
bottle.
And lemon mead.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, this was so I don't know, but the bottle's really cool. Bee nectar. I went to that Big Red Liquors that's by the Half Price Books. First time I've been there. That place is fucking huge and amazing. The next beer for the next episode is actually called Heretic because I thought it was very fitting.
Nice.
Yeah. That's what I'm drinking tonight. What do you got?
Since I am sick, and I do not condone drinking large amounts of alcohol when you're sick, I am drinking another hot toddy, but this time with a different whiskey. This is with some Rebel Kentucky Straight Bourbon. it's brewed in Bardstown, Kentucky, and I'm drinking it out of another Christmas gift that I got. My girlfriend didn't realize that she got it for me. She bought it for me and it didn't arrive on time. And then she was like, oh yeah, this is totally another thing I bought you. It's a Heresy Lodge mug with the Thousand Sun symbol on it. And that is it's a tankard, really, I would say.
That's really cool. She should put the towel. Just a big old mech on there.
You know, I just feel like the Thousand Suns are a little bit more badass than the Tau.
I don't know what you mean. Just like put a big old railgun on it.
Yeah, if I was at a party and the Thousand Suns people were on one side and the Tau were on the other, I'd probably go hang out with the Tau. My bet would be the Thousand Suns people would be cooler.
I don't know, maybe. So in the Tau players, they know pain and shame.
They do. They also probably...
Thousand Sun players don't believe in it.
There's probably a lot of anime going on there, too.
There might be. There might be some tales.
Mm-hmm. So, Betrayer.
Oh, dude.
I gotta say...
This might have taken spot number one for me.
Really?
Yeah.
So, going into this, I had really high expectations because it's ADB, and he's just built up my expectations, and ADB did not fail.
Yep. There's only one part in the book I thought was kind of lame, but we'll get to that later.
Okay. Yeah. One of the best parts about this book is there's no dull moments.
No, it's a ride the whole time.
I was trying to think the other day, like, the book basically takes place in three parts. You have the first part, which takes place on the first world, which is
Armotra or something like that. Armotra, I don't know.
Yeah,
it starts with an A.
It does. Armaturum.
That's it.
Yeah, there it is. Armatura. And that's actually about half the book. Is that one planet Armatura?
Yeah, but I mean, it's an important planet. There, mm-hmm. It's like where the Ultramarines basically train and recruit from.
Mm-hmm. And then the second portion of this book takes place in space, with their, like, I guess, transport to the second planet.
Mm-hmm.
And the third part of it takes place on Daisha. Is it Daisha?
Nasina. Daisha's a city.
Nasina, yeah. Takes place in Nasina. So I think the most boring part to me was probably the transit between. There was like a moment there where I was like, okay, like, Lorgar talks a little bit too much about the song. It kind of made me want to shoot myself at one point.
I really liked the transit because we had this really cool conversation between Angron and Lorgar about what happened with the Space Wolves. And like, Lorgar's reaction is like, this is going to sound really bad if Connor listens to this. But like, whenever we're arguing with Connor, we have the exact same reaction Lorgar does. We're like, God fucking damn it, how do you not see this?
Yeah, anyone who has a stubborn friend who doesn't think things through all the way, that is kind of Angron's character. And it was really cool to see, because all throughout this book, it kind of mentions the Night of the Wolf is what they called it.
Yeah.
Which is the battle between Lehman Russ and Angron, the Space Wolves, and the World Eaters. And the whole time the World Eaters are like, oh yeah, we kicked their asses. And I'm like,
yeah, they're like, they think they won, but they totally didn't. Like, we beat the fuck out of them. I don't know what they don't get.
So let's just, I guess, start out with how the book begins, with this fucking kick-ass, amazing conversation between Lorgar and Magnus. Did not see this coming at all, and I love that Magnus was a part of this book. This just like threw back, and they referenced this conversation and threw back to when Lorgar went back home, and Magnus came to his home planet to talk about what happened at Monarchia and what the plans are for the Word Bearers. What did you think of that conversation?
The first one or the second one?
Well, I guess like the second one, the one in this book.
Yeah. It was interesting because we have basically Magnus just trying to like figure out what the fuck he wants to do. And like, he's sitting here like listening to Lorgar, and he's kind of like, you know, I don't really like your idea. You're kind of going a little fucking crazy.
Yeah, but what I love about this, and Lorgar really came to, I'm going to say something, and I don't want you to be upset.
Oh, I'm ready to be upset.
Lorgar's decisions and the things he said really came like out in this book. Where I was like, oh, that was actually like smart. That was
did a badass thing.
And some of the things he said, is he still an annoying cunt bag? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But like, I think in this book, it talks all about how Lorgar's changed after Korax just chewed him to pieces. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Because he really has. The things he does in this book are just so different than how he was in The First Heretic. one of those things, for instance, was, we obviously know that Magnus is a traitor, but he's not sided with Horus. As a matter of fact, Magnus was the person that tried to stop that from happening.
Yeah.
With Horus and the warp. So the question is, like, Magnus's legion is the only one that really hasn't taken a side.
I mean, honestly, Magnus is just, he's the prime. You can definitely tell he's like his fucking legion is going to be his Zinch one, because they kind of just fuck off from the other ones and just do their own thing and have their own fucking plans.
Yeah, it's like, well, what I really enjoyed about this conversation, though, was, you know, Lorgar's trying to get him on Horus's side. And Manx is like, I'm not sure yet, yada, yada. And Lorgar finally lays it on. He's like, well, isn't it kind of your indecision that caused the fall of your entire legion? Shouldn't you just fucking commit with it already?
Man, that was so sweet. And he just kind of, like, the whole thing, he was like, you know, just imagine if you didn't just tell them to fucking sit down and you just sat in your fucking tower and cried.
I'm like, oh my god, that's actually
I was like, Dave, is that wrong?
Not wrong. And Lorgar really gives it to Magnus here, and Magnus is all like, you're so evil. And the whole time, like, Magnus is saying, oh, you're not going to be able to take down this planet, and Angron's not worth anything. And Lorgar's like, dude, Magnus, like, you are just so fucking cocky. Like, you truly believe that everyone else around you is an idiot and you have to solve all the problems. And I'm like, that is his issue. That is his issue.
That is his flaw.
I really enjoy, like, when I first started playing 40K, it was kind of like a cry. Magnus did nothing wrong. And I realized that there are people that say that ironically as a joke. And people that don't say it ironically because they really haven't read the lore, because Magnus did a lot wrong.
Yeah, every time like I see like an argument about it online, I'm like, how did he not do anything wrong? Like, everything he did was wrong. Like, well, his dad should have just told him about the Whip Boy. I was like, maybe, but why did he fucking burst through it that a demon let him in?
Yeah,
I think this was a good idea.
He also didn't turn himself in, didn't try to fight the Space Wolves. Like, he, like, made so many wrong decisions in a row.
Yeah. I mean, hell, when he did burst in, he destroyed so much on Terra that even if it was, like, good, it killed so much shit. Like, even if, like, the Emperor was like, oh, okay, like, we better stop Horus, they lost their Astronomicon.
Yeah.
And assuming if the Emperor had to, like, get out of his throne or whatever, like, everything on Terra is fucked. That would be fucked at that point.
Yeah, Magnus did more to help Horus than any other traitor Primarch, and it was accidental.
Yeah, and he was trying to warn someone.
Mm-hmm. So, that was just this really kick-ass conversation. And then you have this very Angron moment where you have Argaltal and Karn talking. Now, when I saw Argaltal, I was like, thank fucking Christ. we get to, like, do Argaltal stuff. Now, I'm actually not a big fan of Argaltal's character. And I think it's just because, like, I like his character, don't get me wrong. I think it's the way the Warbearers are portrayed to me. I want them to be weak. And Argaltal is, like, very powerful, but by cheating.
Yes.
So I'm like, okay, I guess he's a powerful space marine, but he is. And he is really good friends with Karn, which I thought was very fitting. Like, their relationship was really cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. And I mean, it's been a while since we've had, like, two different legions with that guy, like a real brotherhood type of deal.
Because you would think that these two legions are the most different. But when we go back to No Fear, and we go back to the First Heretic, we realize that, like, these guys, like, you have Karn, you have Argaltal, and you probably have some relatively, like, close brotherhoods in the two legions, where you compare that to the Ultramarines and the Wardbearers, and they're like, fuck that, we hate everyone here.
Man, I can't wait till the Iron Wars, the team up the Word Bearers, and they, like, start marching, and then the fucking Word Bearers are just chanting and, like, hanging up people. I'm like, god damn it, why can't we get teamed up with people that fucking do their jobs?
I know, right? you have the World Eaters just going crazy as well, and the Iron Wars is like, well, I guess we have to go take Terra. I have a big assumption that that's probably what's going to end up happening. Yep. It's like, at the end, it's going to be like, Horus and Portarabo, and Horus is going to be going crazy with warp shit, and Portarabo is going to be like, okay. So no one's here. Everyone's crazy. Mortarion just turned into a demon thing and they're spreading throw up shit everywhere. How do we take this massive wall? That's my prediction.
We got that going on. The Emperor's children all fucking each other. Worldies are going out of their freaking minds.
Yeah, so you have this conversation with Argal Tall and with Karn. I don't really remember a lot of the conversation. I think most of it was just like, why did you get the nails implanted in your head? You know, and Karn, and it was talking about like Argal Tall becoming a demon and Karn getting the nails implanted in his head. Yeah. And it's like, wow, that's actually two mirroring things happening in these legions where both of them are doing really stupid fucking things all because their Primarch is asking them to. And it's a huge flaw in their legions, in my opinion. I'm going to add a little bit more of this whiskey here.
I ain't judging. I condone drinking too much when you're sick.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I get sick, normally what I do was...
I just can't get over the fucking mug, honestly. It's so sweet.
It's pretty sick, right? I normally just like drink really hot drinks and just sweat it out. Like yesterday, man. It was an ocean. It was disgusting.
That's so hot.
But then you have Angron come down. And Angron, what I love about the relationship with Angron, the World Eaters can't stand Angron. Like, they're just...
No.
Like, the World Eaters treat Angron like Garo did Mortarion. Like, every time that Angron walks in the room, the World Eaters are like, hopefully he doesn't do something fucking weird.
Really hope we don't die today.
Oh my god, please don't murder me. And they're like, they kind of have the, I want to see a legion. That's why I like the Thousand Sons, because it was like, they kind of have this, dad, why don't you love me? I want a legion to be like, I'm fucking, that guy's weird. Like,
that does a whole lot.
I'm going to put nails in my head. This guy's like super fucked up.
Yeah, although when we get to the Dreadnought, that's kind of what he's like. He's like, man, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. So Angron's also like making fun of Argal Tall, calling him creature.
Mm-hmm.
Basically like telling him like he failed to protect that one bitch or whatever is what
he was like, the blessed lady.
Cussing out the blessed lady. Argal Tall tried to fight Angron, which was really cute. And then he loses. And then they go, and
like, Angron's just laughing.
Yeah, he's like, get out of here, creature. So they go back down to the planet, or go down to the planet. And like, shit just goes, this is what I'm talking about. Like, Porto Rabo would have such a terrible time here because they brought like an insane armada. Like, they should have won this battle with little to no casualties.
Well, I mean, hell, if they just did what the captain wanted to do, they just would have bombarded it and been done.
Exactly. But instead, like, they drop down. The word bearers, instead of fighting a war, they start crucifying people.
Yeah.
Literally on tanks. Very strange. And then the world eaters.
Dang, no, we didn't talk about the prelogue where they found like Karn like impaled by the like machine thing that he got hit on Galaxy in Flames.
Yeah.
And they're like, Captain? No, what do you want? I'm busy. I think I found Karn.
Yeah.
You're like, shit, all right.
There was a little scene in the beginning there that was like, okay. If people are smart, they'll remember that the last time they saw Karn, he was impaled by a rhino forklift thing. Oh yeah. Let's quickly ride a scene. Yeah, we pulled him off. He was good. And that's the prologue.
But anyway, yeah, back to.
So the word bearers are crucifying people and the world eaters are walking around blacked out on a murderous rampage. Like, they're not in any sort of formation. They're not attacking vital targets. Within like 20 minutes of the ground force, everything's just fucked.
It blows my mind that like the Ultramarines weren't better in this book.
Yes, it was something that was a little disappointing to me about this book. It really seems like
it's like whatever legion's like the main legion like has to just be OP.
Exactly. And that's very frustrating to me in books, because I'm like, there's definitely, you can come up with other devices to make it more imbalanced, right? More balanced, or like,
yeah,
let's say you want a legion to win, like have something happen.
Yeah, instead, like say like, you know, like the Ultramarines like tricked them and like had them surrounded, and then the fucking captain on her own like shoots a missile down.
Yes, something like that. Because what happens a lot in this book, and one of the points that I'm kind of frustrated about it in, is the fact that like it really seems like the battle's going in the Ultramarines' favor. Because why wouldn't it? The way it's being described is like these legions are terrible at waging war, and the Ultramarines are this like fucking machine at war. And then it's like, and then Karn killed the captain, and it was over.
And well, Angron killed the captain.
Oh, that's true. Angron did kill the captain. But, you know, Karn beat the captain.
Yeah.
And then the battle was over. I'm like, okay, well, it's kind of, gotta do some coughing.
But yeah, going on that note too, like, I mean, like, I get that it was a, like, a training planet. So sure, like, they aren't going to be, like, the best of the best. But there still should have been more of like a strategic gain from the Ultramarines, because they're the Ultramarines. It's what they do. They work in practicals.
Right. We didn't see any of that occurring here. Thought it was weird. I think the Ultramarines were portrayed a little poorly. I feel like if there was more, like that was one that, oh, what was the author's? Dan Abnett did really well, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe if we got some of that, like involvement, maybe it would have been a little bit better. But so shit went south. And basically the next thing we see is Karn like wakes up from blacking out, and he is trying to figure out where everyone is. He's all alone. And then we have Angron as well, who's also kind of fucking crazy.
Yeah. What? I don't even remember how he ends up underground. Oh, the Ultramarines were like blowing up the like buildings and shit.
Yeah, so they were funneling everyone into like the center area. They blew up a lot of it, and it collapsed on Angron. He blacked out and started like digging down
because he didn't know where he was. And the fucking librarians, they like managed to like do this thing called the communion, where they just like put their souls and like find Angron and like, hey, you're going the wrong way. And he's like, ooh, what do you mean I'm going the wrong way? I'm Angron.
Yeah, so the librarians have this ability in the World Eaters to basically tether their souls together to create some sort of, like, being, essentially. It's like a warp being called the Communion. And it's like their power combined, so it's a very powerful being. And it's able to basically talk Angron into going the right way.
Which is hilarious to me.
Like unblacks out and it's like, all right, I guess we'll start digging up.
Yeah, well, also while this is going on, we have the captain and the Conqueror just chasing this Ultramarine ship around trying to blow it up, and we had that cool scene that we talked about in the prequel, and then they like board them,
the Ultramarines.
And, like, the Ultramarines board the Conqueror, and she goes to message the like,
oh, what is his name?
Yeah, I don't remember his name. I don't even remember like what they call themselves, like the Triari or something like that.
The Triari, yeah. He's the leader of the Triari.
Yeah, and they like guard the ship, but he said fuck it, and it went down to the planet without telling anybody.
Del'Varis.
Yeah, Del'Varis.
Yeah, that's a very World Eater thing to do. He was just like, my job's to guard the ship. Fuck that. Nothing's gonna happen to the ship. I'm out of here.
I just love when like someone like messages the captain and they're like, Captain, Del'Varis isn't here. Apparently he went down to the planet, and she's like, this fucking Legion. God damn it.
I know.
Wake up the dreadnoughts, I guess.
Yeah, like she just gets paired with this really shit Legion and has to deal with it. So yeah, she wakes up like all these ancient dreadnoughts. And some of them were like dreadnoughts. The main one. Lork.
Yep.
Lork was a dreadnought before Angron even came to the Legion.
Yeah, he was like the leader of the Legion.
Yeah, he was the
chapter master or something like that.
Something like that. Legion master.
Yeah, the Warhounds.
And so he came out. They beat the shit out of all the Ultramarines, but he's not very happy to find out that they're now at war with the Imperium.
Yeah, he's just like, what the fuck did I wake up to?
What do you mean? We're like fighting the Ultramarines? It's weird. And they're like, yeah, they're on the ship. They're going to kill us. You have to kill them. He's like,
I guess.
But I'm going to have a word with Angron.
Hate that fucking guy. He's ruined everything for us.
You have that going on. At the same time, you also have a bit of a Titan battle. So the Titan part was the least interesting part to me in this entire book. I'm like, it was well described, better than what it was in Mechanicum.
Yeah.
But I'm just not like, I'm not that into Titans, but one of the coolest things was the Ursa Claws that they used.
Yeah,
I was like, that makes me want to have a Titan army. Just the idea. So basically what's happening is during the Battle of Armatura, you have this, the scenes with Karn, the scenes with Angron, the scenes with the captain, the dreadnought on the ship. And then you have the scenes with the Titan crews. Yeah. So
Sirigala.
Sirigala is the other Titan. One is
Ember something?
It's the Ultramarines Titan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Some loyalist Titan. So basically what happens is Lorgar makes his way down to try and rescue Angron. And a loyalist Titan finds him and just blows him the fuck up twice.
Yeah. And this is the part that, like, I hated because, like, dude, Lorgar should be dead. He just took, like, a freaking giant laser to the face twice.
Yeah.
Like, I get he's a Primarch.
When Lorgar does battle here, it was a little frustrating because, like, he grabbed a ship out of the air that was flying, like a plane.
Yeah.
And, like, flung it somewhere and then picked up a tank and threw it at a Titan. Like, it was nothing.
While he's, like, trying to dig out Angron.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if that's equivalent power to what Lorgar has been described to have.
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't even see, like, Magnus doing that shit.
No, the only Primarch I know that can lift a tank and throw it is Vulcan. Yeah. And, like, even that's kind of like a secret that he doesn't like to tell people.
So I'm really strong, guys.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, Lorgar, who's fucking Lorgar, comes out and is like, oh, watch this.
Well, it's not even like his arms. It's like demon arm things that are doing it as he's, like, using his arms to dig out Angron.
Yeah. Seems kind of OP, but it's just Lorgar's weird shit going on. So he gets blown up twice with, like, a laser that has the power of the sun.
Yeah,
it's basically a nuclear bomb. He got hit in the face twice by a nuclear bomb.
Took
his face is all fucked up, but he lives. And the Titan goes to crush him. And that's when Angron comes out of the fucking ground and grabs the Titan's leg and is just keeping it up. And it's breaking all of the things in his back and in his shoulders. So fucking sick.
Lorgar, please move. I can't do this much longer. This sucks. Please move. Get out of here.
And Lorgar's over there like, ugh. And Angron's like, Lorgar, fucking move. So in that process, they get saved because the other Titan, Sirigala comes in and saves the day, kills the other Titan with the Ursa Claw. It's like launching a giant trident from their hand at the other Titan and just blows the other Titan up. That was a really awesome scene. A lot of those people later on in that battle die, though, and only a couple of the Titan's crew survive.
Yeah, it's like Toto, some chick,
and then some girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
For the rest of the battle goes really well for the world eaters. They kind of get fucked up a little bit from the Ultramarines. They lose themselves to the Nails 3 or 4 times. And then it's over. I mean, pretty much, like, there's not a lot more that goes on in that battle from what I recall.
Yeah, I mean, we have the showdown with Card and that Ultramarine captain, who was like actually like a badass.
Yeah.
Who was like what I would expect out of an Ultramarine.
Mm-hmm.
And then Angron shows up and just fucking like tortures the guy, which is weird.
Yes, it was very strange when Angron decided that he was going to make the kill on the Ultramarine, and instead of just killing him, he tortures him, because that doesn't seem like an Angron move.
Mm.
So, Battle for Armature is over. They all head up to the ships. And quite a few events happen here. Some of them really interesting to me. First one I want to talk about is Lorgar meeting with Angron, Karn, Argal Tal.
And Erebus.
So Erebus is here. One thing, so I'm trying to, the Erebus thing kind of confused me because I'm trying to figure out when all this takes place.
What do you mean?
This confirms to me that this book actually takes place before Fear to Tread.
No, it's after. Because they talk about the failure at Kalth.
No. That's No Fear. Fear to Tread is the one with Sanguinius.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or it has to be because... Yeah, this all would have to be because we don't see, like, Sanguinius yet or anything like that either.
Yeah, so the end of Fear to Tread, Sanguinius finds Gilliman. And Gilliman's in this book without Sanguinius. So I'm assuming that Sanguinius meets up with Gilliman after Lycia.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Erebus is the one orchestrating Cygnus Prime. And he shows up at the end of Fear to Tread to Horus.
Yes.
And he's still talking about planning it. So yeah, let's talk about the whole conversation. So first off, Lorgar talks about his plan, which he just talks about the warp being a song and he's orchestrating it. And I got to tell you, this whole time, like, I was pretty annoyed by this whole orchestrating the song thing, but it's warp fuckery. You know, it's not, but exactly. It's not crazy warp fuckery. It's not like insane. He's just like, the more people that die, the crazier the warp gets. Okay. Easy connection.
Makes sense.
Right? Yep. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I'm just imagining like he's like just really into death metal.
Yes.
And the fucking warp.
That's it. That's the orchestra that he's referring
he's
to.
He's just like, yes. Yes.
So he's explaining that to Angron, and they're like, Angron's like, you're using magic. And Lorgar gets all pissed off and then like beats the shit out of Angron with magic.
Yeah, basically, he's like, go pick up that book or something. Like everything around it just blows up.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, this warp fuckery is getting a little powerful. But also at the same time, like, kind of slaves Lorgar to it. So maybe we'll get some things with that. At the other end of the token, Erebus is trying to convince Lorgar that Cygnus Prime is important. And Lorgar's like, you're a fucking idiot. No one's going to convince Sanguinius to be evil. No one's going to convince the Blood Angels to be evil. You're an idiot. Stop doing that.
Yeah, and Erebus is like, but I've seen all the paths and we can do it. And Laura's like, no, you can't. You think you know my brother better than I do? He's the fucking angel. He symbolizes like everything. Like, of course he's not going to change.
So this whole time in this book, Erebus is exactly what you would expect.
A bitch.
A complete bitch. Just like does the worst things. He's a schemer. He's a betrayer. Oh, that's another thing I want to talk about this book is who is the betrayer? But anyway, you have Erebus. He very clearly is. He thinks he's above his Primarch at this point. He thinks that he knows more about the warp than the Primarch does.
Yeah. And Laura was like, you know, you and Typhus, you think you're so fucking close, but you're not.
Oh, we did get a confirmation from Lorgar that Erebus, Typhus, and what's the other word bearer?
Corpharion.
Corpharion created the lodges and communed with the Chaos Gods first.
Yep.
And Lorgar's like, oh, watch out.
Pretty much. He almost just bashes on it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, he goes on. It's like, so why don't you tell everyone about your failure at Kalth? He's like,
yeah,
we didn't fail. I mean, it went down. It's like, oh, is Gilliman dead? Nope. I know Corfarion didn't do the Killian Blow because he just wanted to talk because he's an idiot.
He's like, how many people did we lose? All of them? Weird. And then, oh, my favorite part, Aerys was like, Corfarion wants reinforcements. And Logar's like, Corfarion could just fucking die.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I was like, oh shit, maybe I like Logar.
I was like, fuck Corfarion. He'll just die. And I'm sitting there, I can't wait because I feel like we're going to get some Corfarion death in Market Cal. So.
Well, I've seen Corfarion in this in one of the short stories. And the one thing I hated the most about him, how he's like, I am Lorgar's father. Dude, you're not even a fucking space marine. Get out of here. We don't respect you.
Not at all. Zero respect. So that conversation happens. I thought that was pretty cool. And Lorgar also tells Argal Tall that Erebus is going to make a deal with him and he has to deny it. And Argal Tall is like, of course I will. That was a lie.
Yeah. Which sucks, too, because, like, Argal Tall, like, in this, like, story, his obsession with the Blessed Lady and letting her die is so stupid. Because, I mean, he wasn't fucking there. Like, he didn't let her die. He was literally on Isfahan killing shit.
It would be different if he was like, I have to be by your side at all times. But it's not, So I kind of want to get to that later because it becomes a very big plot point. Mm-hmm. But then we have the two people that survived the Titan engine. They are now promoted to their own Titans.
Yeah, scene where they're like talking to the mechanicum person. And they're like, oh, have you made your decision? And they're like, what decision? And he's just like, I don't think I'm qualified to do this. And just like leaves and gets the other person. And they're like, we're getting fucking fired. And they're fired?
The Mechanicum guy doesn't say I'm not qualified. He goes, something just came up. Yeah, and they were like, they're like,
you liar.
You're a bad liar. And he's like, I know. I am not programmed to lie.
Yeah. Then we get like the main, like mechanic in person, like, oh, did you make your decision? You're like, why are we getting fired? He's like,
the Titan leader.
What?
the Legio leader.
He's like, did you even read what I sent you? And they just like look at each other like, yeah, fuck you guys. All right. I'm good at my job. And I was going to promote you, but you guys are bitches.
Yeah. So basically what happened was on the first planet, the leader of the Legio died in the Titan that they survived from. So the new leader, he has to go into that Titan because that's like the leader's Titan. And he wanted to promote the two that survived because they're like amazing. He wanted to give them their own Titans essentially. Yeah. And they didn't know that. They thought they were getting fired or demoted or some stupid shit. And he was like, believe it or not, like I'm actually like good because they hate him. But he's like,
oh, we skipped another scene, Brute.
When they land and the captain is there.
Yes. Oh, and great scene. So, yes. Fuck, what's his name again?
Yeah. So when everyone comes back on, that's one thing that happens is with the Titan leaders. But also we have a scene with. The World Eaters.
The Varys. The Varys.
Yeah. So Latara is the captain.
Yep.
Latara's talking to those Titan crews. And then she sees Del Varys get off of a Stormbird with a bunch of space marines. And she just fucking shoots him.
Yeah, she just takes out her last pistol and just shoots him right in the head. And, like, I mean, he fucking freaks out. Like, he actually, like, he shoots her.
He shoots her multiple times. And what we see is Eska, who's a librarian in Karn's company, prevents the bullets from hitting her.
Yeah. But she's like, shocked. She was like, what the fuck? You actually just tried to kill me.
Well, what's amazing about her, from the way I read it, she thought she was going to die by doing that.
Yeah, she definitely did.
So she was more shocked that she wasn't dead. And then she realized Eska was there. But like she wasn't, then she just kept yelling at, yelling at Delbarce.
Well, I'm still alive. I might as well do my job here.
And
she rips into him.
Like fucking goes off. And Delvaris is like, you're not my person in charge. Angron doesn't give a fuck. And like Karn and everyone else, they're like, hey, do you want us to step in? And she's like, no, fuck this guy. I got this guy. And just keeps going and ripping into him. And then that's when Delvaris is like, in front of almost the entire Legion that came back. Yeah, and Delvaris is like, okay, fine. She confined him to his quarters.
Yeah, like a child in timeout.
Great. Love that. And then we can talk a little bit about what happens to Delvaris because of that, which I really like this part of the story. I thought this was fucking sick. So
when she goes with the Mechanicum guy?
No. So Delvaris, he gets confined to his quarters.
Yeah.
And later on, he goes to the practice cages where they fight. The way the World Eaters do their fighting cages is they spar all the time, and they always go to like first blood, second blood. If you remember things like the Furious Abyss, how they did this, how the Ultramarine and the Battle for the Abyss and the Space did this.
Yeah, they fought for the like first blood or whatever, but they have like first blood, second blood, third blood, and then like Sanguine Primus or something like that, which is death.
Yes. So what happens is Delvaris wants to get his honor back, so he goes up and the first person comes up and challenges him to first blood, and the guy goes, no, third blood. And Delvaris is like, okay, fine, third blood. So they fight. Delvaris beats the shit out of him. Second guy comes up, Delvaris has first blood. The guy says, no, third blood. They fight. Delvaris wins. Then the third guy happens, and Delvaris starts walking away because it's supposed to say, is it three or eight?
I think it's four.
Four? Okay, so after like four fights, there's a custom that says like you're only supposed to do four in a day.
Yeah, because they don't want them to get a big head or something.
Yeah. So he starts walking away, but the ring of people stop him, and somebody else comes up to do it. And he keeps going and going and going, fighting Delvaris.
That's like 20 or 30 people that he fights. Yeah.
Finally, he like barely wins a match to third blood, and that's when the apothecary comes up. What the fuck is
that? Is that Kragos?
Yes,
they call him something else, like the blood spitter or something.
Blood spitter. Yep, Kragos the blood spitter. He's the apothecary to Karn, and he says to Angel Sanguinis, or
yeah, it's like Sanguinis Ultima or something like that. But yeah, like he just. Like they fucking like he's hell bit on like proving a point and like trying to kill him. And like he gets him like to like he could kill him. And he's like, all right, you learned your fucking lesson.
Great scene.
That was awesome.
It meant nothing to the story, but the writing of it, it like had me on edge the whole time. Like I was not really invested in Delvaris's character. I wasn't really invested in the apothecary's character. But I'm reading that, I'm like, this is fucking cool to read. Like this is one of those scenes I wish I was there watching it, because I would just be like on fucking edge the whole time.
Yeah, and they call it, I think they call this the pits. And they also have like actual like tournaments, and they've invited like other like legions into it too. And that is also why Argal Tall and Karn are so close, is because they were actually like partners.
But they
like,
lose. All
neither
the time.
Of them gave a shit. Like they would just lose all the time for just shits and gigs. Because they're like, I don't want to fight you. Like if you want to fucking fight me, fight me on the battlefield. I'm a different beast there.
Was it? Yeah, it's interesting because like they're like, Karn, how are you such a badass, but you always lose in the pits? He's like, well, my life's not on the line, so.
Yeah, he's like, I don't care here.
Yeah, fuck it. But it talks about, Sigismund.
No, oh, yeah.
He was paired with Kargos, wasn't he? The blood spitter?
Yes.
They were undefeated in the ring. Those were the two.
Which is awesome.
And at one point in time, they challenged Argal Tall. Or Kargos challenged Argal Tall and Karn to Sanguinis Extremis or something like that, where they fought to the death. And both Karn was like, nah.
I don't want to
do that. And Sigismund was like, that's super unhonorable. And so they didn't. But it's like, I mean,
it's very Karn to be like, I don't care.
I'm not going to like kill you. What's the fucking point? So that whole scene happened. That was a fucking sick ass scene. Like one of my favorite scenes, even though it meant nothing to the story.
Yeah.
Then we can kind of go back to Latara. Is that her name?
Yeah, Latara. She has a cool scene with one of the Mechanicum.
Yeah.
So she goes. Yeah, good.
No, it's fine. I'm trying to figure out his name real quick.
I think it was the leader one, right?
Keradar. Yeah, but you're fine.
Sure. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So like they like go into its fucking like elevator and like go and like down into like the forge basically.
With Locke.
Yeah. Lork.
Lork. The dreadnought.
And yep. And they ask him like, "Is Angron dying?" And he's just like, "I cannot say." He's like, "You are not authorized," or something like that.
That was like a cool scene too. Yeah.
Yeah, like the whole time they just keep asking questions like, "Okay, what do you know about the nails?" And he's like, "You are not qualified." And he just like keeps going and like she's figuring out, she's like, "Okay, he wants to tell us, but we have to ask in a very specific way." And he's and she's like, "Who authorized this?" And he's like, "The Omnisiah." She's like, "Okay, so the Emperor." Okay. And he's like, "Some believe that."
Yeah, so it's really interesting because I listened to this whole thing on audiobook. I got to say, it was a fucking phenomenal audiobook. Like, it was really cool. Like, all the voices were cool. Angron talked and just this, like, kind of nasally, but he seemed, like, on the fucking edge all the time. And it was really good. And this was a really cool scene with the audiobook because it was always, like, "You are not authorized. You are not authorized. You are not." Yeah. I was like, "Oh, that must be so annoying." And I realized, like, I was getting annoyed, but I realized, like, holy shit, like, that's what they're feeling. Like, the book made me feel exactly how the character's feeling. Like, it was really well done. But they kind of pulled out of the Mechanicum that Angron was dying, which we knew because Lorgar had revealed it.
Yeah.
But because of the nails, Angron is dying. So it has been shown in this book that the Emperor did attempt to remove the nails.
Yes, but like,
how much did he really attempt?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like they were able to do like much with it.
Yeah, I'm curious about this because it's like the Emperor wasn't really there. Other people got to work on it, and then the Emperor just sent a letter to him saying, "Don't talk about it."
Yeah.
Like, the Emperor didn't tell this Mechanicum guy. It talks about the Mechanicum guy never even met the Emperor. He was just like, "I remember I got a letter." Had a seal.
It was stamped.
Can't say anything. So that was a really cool scene. Now we can kind of go into the only character that's kind of left. And that's Argal Tall. And man, oh man, this was fucking crazy.
Yeah, so as predicted, Erebus comes up to Argal Tall and was like, "Yo, what up, dude?" As he's like sitting there at the Blessed Lady's
shrine.
So it's almost like a shrine monument type of deal.
Well, it's her burial. It was supposed to be her like mausoleum.
Yeah, but people stole her body
off of Isfahan. Or not Isfahan. In the ship before Argal Tall got back.
Yeah, which is fucking weird, but you know, whatever. Word bearer is going to do word bearer things.
Heretic shit.
And he's basically just like offering him a deal, like trying to get him on his side. And then he's like, "Look, your friend Karn is going to die. I'm going to stab him in the back on a planet with a gray sky."
That's what he has the prediction.
Yeah. And he's like, "Karn's not going to die. It's Karn." He's like, "That's what you think."
Yeah.
So I die though.
And the whole time too, the demon inside Argal Tall is like,
"Dude, I love Rom.
Don't brawl." Yeah, he's like, "Don't fucking listen to this guy. Don't, this guy's a fucking idiot.
Just kill him now."
Yeah. He's like, "Just murder him. Like, he's a piece of shit. Like, this dude's clearly lying to you." And Argal Tall is like, "All right, well, I care about Karn, but whatever." And that's when Erebus reveals that he can revive.
I want to ask about this because Argal Tall says, "You revived Torghadon."
Yes, that was confusing to me
as
well.
Where the fuck is Torghadon at? I mean, the Blessed Lady came back pretty much herself. I can't imagine them bringing back Torgadon and him not being Torgadon.
That's a really good point. I do remember that. Holy fuck, yeah. I remember reading that. I was like, weird, but not relevant to the story, I don't think. Did he bring back Torgadon? Was it Torgadon?
That's what it said, Torgadon. Because I read it like three times.
Was it in No No Fear?
I don't
create the Ruin Storm?
Remember him? Maybe he like brought him back to life and then just like tortured him in No No Fear and just wasn't mentioned.
Huh.
But I was like, wait a minute, where's he at? Because I would like to see him again. He was one of my favorites.
Oh my gosh, I actually like opened the book right to the fucking page.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah, that's crazy. Argaltal listened in silence as Erebus told the whole tale. The ambush at the fleet yards, burning ships, raining wreckage down onto the world, the poisoning of Kal's son, the birth of the kaleidoscopic ruin storm. Argaltal waited at the very end, though the truth he heard very little after the first half. His mind was afire with one grave possibility. Torgadon, you used his flesh in that ritual. You summoned a dead man's soul. So I think Erebus retrieved Torgadon's body and used it at Kalth to create the Ruin Storm. Weird.
Yeah, real weird.
Maybe we need to go back and look at that. But he used his soul to do it, not necessarily bringing him back to life.
How does that work?
I don't know.
Why is his soul so powerful to make a giant Ruin Storm? I don't know.
Weird shit going on here. So Erebus says he can bring back the Blessed Lady as long as he has her body. So Argaltal enlists the help of Karn to go slaughter a bunch of fucking crazy cultist dudes. I love how it's like, basically what happens, Karn goes with him below the decks. And he's like, are you about to kill all these people? And Argaltal's like, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, shit. Is it worth it?
Like, yeah. It's like, all right, well, I'm going to stay out here. Uncle Tall's like, I'll be back in 7 minutes. And then in 6 minutes and 45 seconds, he comes out the door with the ruins of her body. He's like, yep. How many people are in there? And he was like, 200.
Like,
Jesus
<all right>.
Christ. So they bring that body back to Erebus. He uses a bunch of cultists as a sacrifice to bring her back, which is funny because you also have like, you also have Karn like, are those guys going to die? And I was like, yep, probably. So Karn isn't really having any of this witch fuckery.
Like, man, this shit's weird.
Yeah, he's like, why are you all these people are just dying for no reason, just slaughtering of innocents. And it's a conversation they have because he's like, you slaughter innocents all the time. Karn's like, only when I'm lost to the nails. And Argaltal's like, well, you made the choice to put the nails in your head, so kind of on you still.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Can't argue with that one. Then we get Serenity back. We get the Blessed Lady. She's back to life.
And she's not blind anymore.
She is unblinded. Now, she's been being tortured by demons in the warp, supposedly. She refuses to talk about it. And she's just mind blown by the appearance of Argaltal, of Karn. They have to bring her to like quarters to keep her safe. And on the way, Karn and Argaltal are like slaughtering people, including Astartes.
Yeah, because they're just like trying to touch her. I'm like, what the hell's happening here?
They're trying to like get her away. It's so amazing to me. Like, imagine being Serenity, because it's like
Cyrene,
yeah.
Or no, she like someone like pronounced it wrong. A perpetual shows up and pronounced it wrong. It's like Serene or something like that.
Yeah, so she constantly, people are getting slaughtered around her for like all the time just to protect her. At that point, I'd be like, you know, maybe this is a little fucked up, guys.
Yeah, I mean, she's a human and she's just watching like everything like around her just get murdered. And she's like, her feet are like soaked in blood.
Although she just did come back from the warp, so maybe it's not that crazy for her.
She's like, you know, I've been through some shit. Yeah.
So she's back. Argaltal's happy. He promises. Dylan, get this. Argaltal promises to never let her die again. Thanks, Argaltal. She's really freaked out that like he's a demon and he's been like embracing her. I think at this point she's like really like, I don't know what's going through her mind. Because to me, when I read her, she doesn't seem like a fucked up human. You know what I mean?
Nah.
She seems like a nice person. And in my mind, I'm like, how are you okay with all of this?
I mean, at this point, she's probably like, you know what? At least I'm alive, I guess.
You think she's just kind of along for the ride?
Yeah, I'm curious to see where her story's going.
Yeah, it's a very interesting, because like all kinds of fucked up shit's happening around her. And she's just like, well, here I am, people getting slaughtered again. There's a demon thing in front of me. This space marine has nails in his head. I must be on the good side. But at the same time, I guess the good side did blow up her entire planet.
This is true.
Yeah. So that's kind of everything that transpires in space.
No, there's one more scene.
Which one is this?
Lorgar and Angron talk.
Yes.
Lorgar tells him, like, we got to get a new Cena.
Yes. So that's where I was like, okay, now we need to figure out where we're heading. We get the conversation with Lorgar and Angron, where Lorgar reveals to him that he needs to go back to his homeworld. And Angron is not having it at first, but Lorgar convinces him. Now, technically, we missed another scene, too, where Lorgar has a conversation with Horus.
Oh, yeah, he does have that.
Horus summons him by using some weird spell.
The book that Lorgar gave him.
And this is fucking crazy scene because basically Horus is like, tell me what's going on. And Lorgar's like, wouldn't you like to know, War Master? He's like, listen here, priest. And Lorgar's like, that's right, I am a priest. And then he's like disappearing. He's like, and don't forget it. Like, basically, Lorgar's like talking so much mad shit to Horus. I'm like, dude, Horus will fuck you up. But at the same time, he doesn't really have a lot of friends anymore. I think like at the end, like maybe Horus could have been like, I'm going to send Porto Rabo after you. And Lorgar is like disappearing. Not until he gets the butt plugs out of his butt. So Lorgar reveals that they need to go to Nicaea, and then they talk about the battle, the Night of the Wolf. Really cool scene. You seem to love this scene, so talk about it.
Yeah. So it was really, I just love the whole like philosophical like thing behind it. So throughout the book, we've had like several call-outs to this night where the World Eaters are approached by the Space Wolves and they fucking just duke it out. And Leman Russ and Angron, they're just fucking fighting. At one point, we have Leman on his back basically crawling away, and Angron thinks he's like one, and like Leman's like, look around you. And he's completely surrounded by Space Wolves. And his whole thing's like, look, we could kill you right now. This is what a brotherhood is supposed to be like. This is what your legion is supposed to be. But look what you did to them. Yeah, like, you destroyed your legion. Like, they're over there just fucking killing things. Like, they don't care about you. Look at what my legion did. They are surrounding you to protect me. Like, we could kill you right here. And he's like, you're all fucking pathetic. I am the winner. And like goes back and like to like when Laura's there, and Laura's just like, bro, did you not just learn what Leman Russ was doing? Like, he's telling you that like you didn't win. you lost because they could have killed you. He's like, nah, but he's crawling away from me. Like, what do you mean I lost? He's a little bitch. He's like, but they could have killed you. Like, his whole thing was what you did to your legion, you destroyed them. And they don't care about you. Where his legion is very tactical and like did what they made
they were,
the necessary they were sacrifices. After,
yeah, they were going after a strategic point, an objective.
Yes.
There's no objective for the world eaters. They don't think about that. One thing I love about that scene though was the argument before the battle broke out.
Oh yeah, where Angron's like
making some strong fucking points, dude.
Yeah, I mean he's basically saying like the Emperor is no different than the fucking slave masters at Nusina.
Yeah, he's like, look, I go and I conquer planets. Sometimes they're evil planets. Sometimes they're planets that just want to be left alone. I don't do it in the name of the Imperium because I wouldn't fall in an Imperium that has me do that. I do it because I like it now, because I have to.
Yeah, and like his whole like thing too is like, look, like the so-called compliance, it's not like what these planets want, so we're forcing on them. They're basically becoming industrialized planets. Like they aren't what they're supposed to be or what they used to be. We're destroying everything and taking over. Like we are the slave masters.
Yeah, and he calls Leman Russ a pussy. He's like, he does. Go fucking run back to the Emperor, you pathetic dog. He's like, basically, like, go. He's like, the Emperor didn't order you here, so you can't do anything to me, can you?
Yeah, and like, they even make fun of like the executioner title.
Yeah, I can just tell like Leman Russ is like, fuck, the Emperor didn't order me here. Because Leman Russ definitely came on his own fruition, right?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, what are you going to do without daddy's consent? You know, you can't do anything. We're going to cry. You're going to run back to daddy. And it's like very true. And like Angron's ideology is amazing. The problem is he's lost his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like if he never got the nails implanted, maybe he would have realized, you know, like, wow, the Imperium sucks. Would he have still turned traitor? Absolutely. But for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
It'd be very similar to Portarabo, I think, where it's like, well, even though Portarabo kind of cried about it, Portarabo was trying to do something genuine, you know, like he was trying to like improve the Imperium. I think Angron would have done the same thing. Now you're just in it for the slaughter. So they're off now. They're off to Nicaea. And they arrive, and Angron wants to see what's going on. Who's in charge? Fucking great scenes. Like, Andy does such a good job with these scenes, dude.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was like, he gets there. I'll just, like, skip the setup for it. And, like, he, like, arrives at the fucking, like, castle. And it's, like, basically a kid. But it's the same family who was his owner, basically.
Hmm.
And there's a female captain there. And she tries to hold it together. Then she just pisses herself. And... Angron's break fucking just smashes her skull because he stalked back to him. Because like they're like, oh, you're supposed to be dead. Like you betrayed the rebellion. Like you disappeared. He's like, I didn't fucking betray anybody.
Yeah, they said he retreated. He abandoned them.
Yeah, abandoned them.
So he gets crazy and he tells the world eaters and he tells the word bears, kill. Every single
he tells Karn and Argal Tall.
Yeah, it's like, tell the world eaters and world bears to kill every single fucking person on this planet. Now you just imagine the kid who's still alive at this point on the throne, just like, oh, this is gonna suck. So they begin the slaughtering, but while they're in the process, Gilliman, he arrives. Yeah, he shows up. He didn't do as much in this book as I wanted him to, but I'm kind of glad. Like, I get why ADB did that. This book was not about Gilliman. He probably realized that the Ultramarines get, like, every short story in existence and was like, you know what? Everyone's had enough of Gilliman. So Gilliman shows up. He is making plans to Basically, the armada that they had has been split up to go all across Ultramar. So they've fractured themselves into really small things. And Gilliman has assembled a bit of a picket force to strike at the heart, which is, you know, where Lorgar and Aggron are. So that picket force is strong enough to overwhelm the force on above the planet, the combined armada of the World Eaters and Word Bearers Legion.
Yeah, because they also split themselves up too after the planet, after Armatura or whatever.
That's what I meant. Yeah, so like after Armatura, the World Word Bearers split their entire force up. So Gilliman pretty much wins the space battle.
I will say, like, this was a very well written space battle.
Yes, it was really cool. Basically, there's three main ships, and the Ultramarines managed to blow up the Word Bearer's capital ship.
Mm-hmm. But on the capital ship was the Sirene, and we got to meet a new Perpetual.
Yes, another Perpetual Damon shows up. Damon is there, and he thinks he is trying to get her to come with him. She freaks out, asks the Astartes to kill him. They do, and then he appears again.
Yeah. And but something that he said, though, to her, like when he met her, is, you're one of us now.
Yes.
You're
Perpetual. So he reveals that she is now Perpetual. He wasn't sure if Erebus meant to do that, but apparently in his ritual, that's what he made her. So that's the last we see of her, though.
Yeah, she's like running away because, and her last bodyguard gets killed by like Damon, who like came back to life, and he's like, come with me.
So she's disappeared again. We don't know what happened with her. Maybe we'll see her on Market Calf, maybe not. But basically, that she's disappeared. That ship crash lands into the ocean, causes this huge tidal wave, kills quite a few people on the ground force that is trying to invade the final city. Additionally, the Ultramarines board the primary ship of the Conqueror. Now, this fucking space battle is really cool. The Conqueror is murdering fucking ships because she's amazing at it. She's getting in real close, shooting harpoons at ships and pulling them in and tearing them apart in space. It was just really fucking cool to read. Definitely the best space battle I've seen.
But this time when they got boarded, though, holy shit, they had space marines this time.
They did. He learned his lesson.
Yeah, because like at first, like she like calls for him, and she's like, I swear to fucking God, if he is not on this ship again. And he's like, I, Captain, I am here.
Yeah.
On it.
So Devaris defends the ship, but it's like to the last man.
Yeah.
Like basically it's her, one helmsman, and Devaris are like the last people.
Yep.
And a few space marines are like the last people alive in the control room. So the Conqueror almost just got fucked. Additionally, on the ground. So this is when shit gets a little wild. The Ultramarines manage to land a sizable force on the ground, and they start fighting. And Gilliman immediately starts fighting Lorgar. Another thing I'm a little upset about here.
I kind of enjoyed this fight, at least the beginning fight, and because like I really like that, like Gilliman's just fucking like he's like giving it to Lorgar. He's like, how many fucking planets, Lorgar? How fucking minis is like naming off planets as he's like just beating the shit out of them at the time.
Yeah.
He's like, you see that he has like this like weird like mark on his neck or something. He's like, yeah, space issue, because I was in space without a fucking helmet.
Yeah. So I personally think Gilliman should have wrecked Lorgar pretty quickly. Oh, yeah. But Lorgar was able to hold his ground. Lorgar's changing. We've seen this. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Argal Tall's story, he's out there protecting Karn.
He's literally just following Karn. It's out of his mind. Like Karn tries to kill him several times because of Erebus's vision.
The skies are gray.
Yep.
The skies are gray.
I'm pretty sure he sees Erebus and he's like, oh, look, gray skies.
Yeah, and Argal Tall is like, fuck, I better go protect Karn. And the whole time the creature's like, what the fuck are you doing?
He's like, dude, Karn's fine. He's killing everything. He's fine. Let's go kill shit ourselves.
Now, granted, Karn almost died multiple times.
Yeah.
Argyle saved him. But Argyle Tal almost also died multiple times. And
Karn two world eaters. They're freaking mind.
Yeah. So it's like, well, that's just what happens, you know, in battle. Like, I wouldn't say, like, that's prophecy. Like, if you say, like, if I see a soldier that's, like, a lifelong soldier, he's going to be at war till he dies. And I say, you're going to die in battle.
I'm shocked.
Some sort of fucking prophet. But then basically what happens, trying to remember, Angron shows up to the battle with Gilliman, and Lorgar backs off that battle to complete his song deal. Because
Gilliman, like, messed it up, and he's like, God damn it, Gilliman, you ruined everything. Mm-hmm. And then he starts fighting Angron, and Angron's like getting shittier and shittier. And he's like, oh, now this is good. Yes, yes, muy bien.
Yeah, this whole time, ADB does a really good job at illustrating how Angron's losing his fucking mind.
Yeah.
Oh, more and more and more. Finally, Angron snaps. What causes it to go off?
I think he's yelling at Gilliman because Gilliman's asking, like, why he betrayed the Imperium or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Angron's like, dude, fuck you. You don't know what it was like to be a slave. You had this perfect planet and this perfect world given all everything. I was nothing. Pretty sure that's what happened. And he just snapped on, like, Gilliman's, like, life and how, like, perfect everything was. And he's like,
yeah, he was like, who grew up a slave? Who had the nails implanted? Oh, who got to grow up on a really nice world? Who does daddy love? You know, just some stupid, like, really upset shit that Angron's going on and on about. But then he snaps and it all kind of works out. And this giant firestorm consumes Angron. Now, I knew this was going to happen, but I didn't know how it was going to happen.
Yeah.
So let's do a bit of a comparison here. Angron's going into demonhood. Hey, Dylan, what did Angron need to go into demonhood?
He just needed to get really pissed off.
He needed to get really mad. And they needed to kill enough people in Ultramar for the warp to do some warp fuckery.
Yep.
Hey, Dylan. What did Fulgrim need to convert to demonhood?
Dude, I don't even know.
This is like night and day difference. Like, this is makes so much more sense to me. It's not super confusing. It's not super complicated. It's something I'm like, is it a stretch? Yes, but it's supposed to be because it's dealing with the warp. Yeah. But it's not too far of a stretch where I don't even like comprehend what I'm reading.
Yeah, and you also have like, as it's like, Lorgar's doing like a full-on fucking ritual as it's happening. That really wasn't happening in Angel Exterminatus.
Yeah. Then we get some disruption to the ritual. The librarians have decided that it's time to put a stop to this. Yeah. They do their
communion
deal. And with the help of Lork, the first dreadnought, who starts beating the shit out of Lorgar. Yeah, and the communion is beating the shit out of Lorgar in the Materium. Lorgar decides that, like, he's getting the shit beat out of him. Then he's like, oh, wait, you're just a bunch of space marines. Like, he figures out what they are.
Yeah.
And he's able to kill them because he's Lorgar in the warp. Whatever, I'll give it to him.
Sure.
And then he's able to kill a dreadnought. Like, yeah, you're a Primarch. Like, fine. Like, he's able to beat through all of this stuff. But actually, he's not the one that kills Lork. Lork's beating him up. And then all of a sudden, he turns around. And there's Angron emerge from the fire.
Yep.
And he's a fucking crazy-looking demon thing.
He's a monster.
He looks a lot like a bloodthirster, in my opinion. From all the artwork we've seen of him, but he doesn't have like a demon model. We can hope.
Rumors have it.
Rumors have it. It's coming. But looks like a bloodthirster comes up, just beats the fucking shit out of Lork. Gilliman has retreated.
Rips him out of the dread.
And eats him.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. He eats his like dead body Angron's like eating shit now. Gilliman's retreated at this point, and the battle's won, and everyone's killed.
Well, this is there's another thing that I did not like was the Titan fight here on this planet. The Ultramarines bring a fucking more the giant fucking Titans.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even do anything.
Yeah.
It was more impressive stepping and watching things come to it. Like, why would it never shoot a weapon?
Yeah, so I'm not... apparently, it was charging up its weapon to just annihilate the entire city or some shit like that.
It had fucking machine guns on it and shit, too. Yeah.
So it did just sit there. That's why I didn't really bring it up, because I don't think it's really that important to the battle.
Well, it's where Argaltal...
It's the location.
That's his thing, yeah.
But not really, like, important to the battle.
Yeah, I just hated it because it was like, man, this thing could have been really badass. And I was just like, here's this useless giant piece of equipment.
So near the end of the battle, Argaltal and Karn decide to part ways. That's when they make the joke, like, oh, I saved you 10 times. I saved you 16. Ha, ha, ha. And he's like, see, Karn's like, see, I'm fine. He leaves. Argaltal stays on the Titan that they had just taken down. Mm-hmm. Then Erebus shows up. And Argaltal's like, hey, great news. I was able to save Karn. And Erebus. He's like, Erebus. Ah, that's good. Because he was chosen. And then Erebus fucking stabs Argaltal with a ritual blade. And kills him.
Yep.
And while he's dying, Argaltal's like, we don't die here. We die under... giant great wings.
Yeah, we're supposed to die on Terra.
And he looks up and he sees the Aquila, which is the giant hawk eagle.
Yeah, the eagle, the two-headed eagle.
Yeah, which is giant wings stamped on the Titan.
Yeah, and Erebus just like fuck. Points at it.
Yeah, and he dies. It was insane.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck?
I didn't see it. Like, what a great moment in a book. Like, an important character. It made me think this book was worth it. Like, you didn't get any of that in Fulgrim. Like, no one important died.
Yeah.
Marius Vorsine, who gives a fuck, you know? So this was, like, just a fucking great moment. And it was terrible because it made me hate Erebus, but it's like watching Game of Thrones and a villain does something that makes you hate them, and you're like, ah, I like this because I'm supposed to hate. that happens. Back on the ship. Go ahead.
I was saying this. Now we get a cool scene where Karn is talking to Lorgar, and Lorgar's like, "Hey, wonder who killed Argaltal?" And then we have a moment in the pits.
Well,
and Erebus is fighting someone. And they're like, all right, who's next? And Karn comes out and he's like, Sanguine, whatever, fight to the death. And Erebus is like, fuck, okay.
Well, Erebus doesn't even get a chance to respond. Karn just starts fucking going.
He fucked and destroyed him.
Takes him out in like three hits. And literally, I'm sitting there like, is fucking Erebus about to die?
I know, I was like, is this going to be it? Is this really going to be it?
Because you have Erebus, as cocky as he is, he's sitting there in his mind, I never saw this coming.
Yeah.
Wait, like, a minute.
This wasn't in any of the paths I saw. I'm going to die here. This dude's not fucking around. He's going to kill me. And
yeah,
he almost does.
It was really good.
He puts cuts off his arm.
Yeah, Erebus's arm is gone. Puts the sword in Erebus's back. Is about to turn on the chain blade. Erebus disappears. Now, pretty sure Erebus gets teleported to Horus's fleet. And that's where we see him in Fear to Tread. That's my guess. But the other thing we have is Angron. He's being locked away in the same room he was locked in when he first entered the ship.
Oh, yeah. Angron.
Now he's a demon. And the water is turning to blood. People are going crazy all over the ship. That's why Karn asked Lorgar about it. And Lorgar's like, look, that's Angron. He's just more pissed.
He's exactly what he's always been, just a little more angry.
So Karn goes to see him, and Angron asks him to kill 100 serfs.
No, it's 300. 300
serfs. He's like, why? He goes, I need their skulls.
Build me a throne, Karn.
Throne. Blood for the blood god. Skulls for the skull throne. Fucking sick. It was great. Phenomenal book all the way through.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really fucking good.
It was. I would say... it's probably my number one.
It's my number one. It overtook Fulgrim. It took 24 books. Or I guess technically it's only been 19.
This had some great warp fuckery.
It was so well written.
Demon ascension.
And it never felt like a drag at all either.
Never. Not once.
Like the one thing about Fulgrim is like there's like parts like we already knew about because it was in like the fucking four books before it. We're like, mm-hmm. This is like everything was new. And it was like, holy fuck, this is sick.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal book. Congrats to ADB.
Yep, this is a 10 for me. 10 for importance, too.
Yep, absolutely. You need to know what happened to Angron. You need to know what's going on with Lorgar.
That's really good.
All right.
Guys, that is the review of Betrayer. Really fucking good. As always, contact us by going to our Discord. It's a lot of fun in there. You can do that by going to our Twitter at Heresy Lodge. We also have tips enabled on our Twitter. If you want to help support the podcast, anything that is donated goes right back into it, whether it's beer, 40K top tabletop stuff, podcast things, it all comes back. You can email us at theheresylodge@gmail.com. If you're on the YouTube, like, subscribe, leave us comments. Love to respond. Love talking to you guys. Email us at theheresylodge@gmail.com. I don't remember if I did that part or not.
I don't remember either.
Either way, hopefully you guys have a great week, and we'll be back next week to preview Mark of Kalth.